Gobi Chandra Lava Givar Dahari Yasod Nandana Vajjana Ranjana Yasod Nandana Vajjana Ranjana Yamunathira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jai Om Vishupa Paramahansa Parivikacharya Asapadipata Shri Shri Maharaj's Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Hila Prabhupada Ki Jai Om Vishupa Paramahansa Parivikacharya Asapadipata Shri Shri Maharaj's Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Shri Prabhupada Ki Anantikodi Vaishnavindi Ki Praying Sikha Ho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Harshavasri Gaur Bhaktivindi Ki Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gogoka Vinav Shamakunda Radha Kuna Girivan Ki Grantharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Samaveda Bhaktivindi ki, Nitagor Premanandi. All glories to the Samadavodis. All glories to the Samadavodis. All glories to the Samadavodis. All glories of Lord Sri Guru and Sri Guru. Anyway, my name is Siki Mihiridas. Sakya Shiva Papa took Diksha 1975, second initiation here in Mayapur 1977 from Papa. Well, of course, he was sick at that time. So, most services in the beginning, of course, at that period, joining ISKCON was Papa was really pushing the book distribution. So, even people who didn't want to do it did it anyway because we wanted to make Papa happy. And then I went to Africa, West Africa, Bhakti Tirtha Swami around 1980 to 83. From 83 until about 3 years ago, I just worked, helped with Atlanta Temple. And recently, 1 year, New Vrindavan, temple president, but it's not like being temple president here, you know, get a nice car, you know, just have to wash the pots, clean the toilets. Temple president in America means you do everything that nobody else wants to do. And now recently going back to Atlanta, came here, of course, this is our international center. And we come to get our inspiration, get rejuvenated, go back to the West for those of us who had those services there and try to push on this movement, bring some more people back to Mayapur. So that's my situation here. Given this class, especially yesterday's class, was very nice, wasn't it? So that's tough act to follow. Anyway, just generally anybody speaks, everybody has some little realization, so you know, whoever speaks, you can get something out of it. I know there's a lot more qualified people here who should be speaking. In particular, I would have liked to hear from Brother Maya, would have been nice. I don't know. Anyway, it's Mayapur. We have to work out those politics. Get some of these senior Vaishnavis up here to speak to. I know when she's in Alajwa, she gives class all the time. She had a lot of realizations, she's done a lot of service for Prabhupada's mission, so it's good to hear from those folks. Can you hear me? Huh? Hey, you need to turn it up, because I speak real soft. Haribo, can you turn it up a little bit? So anyway, we have 9 verses. I don't know why... Okay, I'll speak slower. I have a tendency to talk too fast also. Well, we have 9 verses. they could have split this up into three classes, actually, when you look at these verses. So, I don't know. I've been debating, you know, what to do. But anyway, we'll see what happens here. Plus, I forgot my little paper, my little cheat sheet, so I'm going to have to wing it. But whoever is picking these verses, maybe they can speak with some of the older devotees, and they can tell me, even though the purport is short, there's a whole lot of information in those little short purports sometimes. So what I'll do is I'll read the verses and purports, and then I'll go back and make some comments on some of those purports. So reading 4th Canto, chapter 13, text 11 through 20. Descendants of Dhruva Maharaj. And I can't see either. Can somebody turn their lights on also? That would help me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayana Namaskritya. Param Charam Narottaram. Devin Sarasvatim Vyasam Tura Mudirayat Nasta Paraishu Adureshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavarutama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Nashtaki Shunpata Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanam Virya Ransto Ibadrani Vidunoti Sumitsitam. So, text 11. Matvatam janam umatam kula vidara samandrinaha vatsaram bu patim chakru yaviyam sambrame sutam. Translation. For this reason, the ministers and all the elderly members of the family thought Utkala to be without intelligence, and in fact mad. Thus his younger brother named Vatsara, the son of Brahmi, was elevated to the royal throne, and he became king of the world. Purport. Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Sri Prabhupada Ki. It appears that although there were monarchy, there was monarchy, it was not at all an autocracy. There were senior family members and ministers who could make changes and elect the proper person to the throne. Although the throne could be occupied only by the royal family. In the modern days also, whenever there is monarchy, sometimes the ministers and elderly members of the family select one member from the royal family to occupy the throne in preference to another. That's a class in itself right there, huh? So, we'll come back to that. Text 12. Sravitya Vatsara Sheyasta Rayatsuta Sarat Majan Pushpanam Tigmake Tuncha Ishamujat Vasam Jayam. Translation. King Vatsara had a very dear wife whose name was Sarvitti, and she gave birth to six sons named Pushpanar, Tigmaketu, Isha, Urja, Vasu, and Jaya. Purport. Vatsara's wife is mentioned here as Ishta, which means worshipable. So the wife is actually worshipable. She's not just, you know, hey, where's my prasadam? You didn't do the laundry. And, you know, why don't you dress nicer or something like that? Kali Yuga, that's how we. In other words, it appears that Vatsara's wife had all good qualities. For example, she was always very faithful and obedient and affectionate to her husband. Of course, in Kali Yuga, it's just the opposite, right? It's, who are the worshipful women? Right? The movie stars. And I think, oh, wow, she's so beautiful. That's the only qualification. She should be physically beautiful. So everything's so backwards. She had all good qualities for managing household affairs. If both the husband and wife were endowed with good qualities and live peacefully, then nice children take birth, and thus the whole family is happy and prosperous. That's another class. Anyway, we'll go on. Somehow another Christian wants to put all these things together. Text 13. Pushpana sha prabha bharya dosacha deva bhavatu prathe maryandina sayam ityasan prabhusutaha. Pushpanar had two wives named Prabha and Dosha. Prabha had three sons named Pratar, Madhyadina, and Shayam. Text 14. Padosho nishto yusata iti dosha tutasraya yusta sutam pushkarinyam sarvateja samadare. Translation. Dosha had three sons, Pradosha, Nishta, Vyusta. Vyusta's wife was named Pushkarini, and she gave birth to a very wonderful son named Sarvatija. Text 15 and 16. Sachakshu sutam akutyayam patyamanu avapaha mano ashtu mahisi virajan nadvaya sutam puran kusam tritam duyaman satyavatam ritam vratam agnistoma atiratram prajuna shivam ubukam. Translation. Satyavati's wife Akuti gave birth to the son named Chakshusha, who became the sixth Manu at the end of the Manu millennium. Imagine if you could have such a son, huh? So. Nadwala, the wife of Chakshu Manu, gave birth to the following faultless sons: Puru, Kusha, Trita, Dumya, Satyavana, Rita, Vrata, Agni Sotam, Atiratra, Prajumna, Shibi, Ulmuka. Text 17. Ulmuka janyat putram pushkarinyam sarutamam agnam sumanasam kaitim kritam agni rasham gayam. Of the 12 sons, Ulmuka begat 6 sons and his wife Pushkarini. They were all very good sons, and their names were Anga, Sumana, Kyati, Kratu, Angira, and Gaya. Text 18. Sunita Nangasaya Patni Shushuve Venam Ubanam Yato Shiyat Sarajarshir Nirvino Niragat Murat. The wife of Angi, Sunita, now this is significant, we're getting to the pastime, gave birth to the son named, who knows? Hema, who was very crooked. So previously all these wonderful sons are being produced. Now we'll send a crooked son. So the saintly King Anga was very disappointed with Vena's bad character. And he left home and kingdom and went out to the forest. Of course, nowadays, if you have a very bad son, he can become a rap artist. Become famous, right? Many people heard of that Snoop Doggy Dog, right? He's practically a criminal. But people worship him, isn't it? Oh, he got his own TV show. Kali Yuga. Text 19 and 20. I'll read 19 and then we'll chant 20 together. Yamanga Shepu Kupeta Vagraja Munaya Kila Katatso Tasya Buyaste Manmatur Dakshinankaram. So I'll repeat after me. I think this is on the board. Arajake Tadaloke Dashubi Pirita Praja Jatu Narayanam Mesh. Jatu Narayanam Shena Ritu Adya Shiti Saraha Arajake Tadaloke Dashubi Pirita Praja Jato Narayanam Shena Ritu Adya Shiti Sraha Arajake Tadaloke Dashubi Pirita Praja Jato Narayanam Shena Ritu Adya Shiti Swaha Prabhu. Ladies, Vaishnavis, one lady at least. I'm going to skip the word for word and read the translation in purple. My dear Vidura, when great sages curse, their words are as invincible as thunderbolt. So remember that. Thus, when they cursed King Vena out of anger, he died. After his death, since there was no king, all the rogues and thieves flourished, and the kingdom became unregulated, and all the citizens suffered greatly. On seeing this, the great sages took their right hand of Vena as a churning rod, and as a result of their churning, Lord Vishnu, in his partial representation, made his advent as king, the original emperor of the world. Purport. Monarchy is better than democracy because if the monarchy is very strong, the regular principles within the kingdom are held very nicely. Even 100 years ago in the state of Kashmir in India, the king was so strong that if a thief were arrested in his kingdom and brought before him, the king would immediately chop off the hands of the thief. Notice he said hands, not hand. So you lose both hands. As a result of the severe punishment, there were practically no theft cases within the kingdom. Even if someone left something on the street, no one would touch it. The rule was that the things could be taken away only by the proprietor and that no one else would touch them. In the so-called democracy, whenever there is a theft case, the police come and take note of the case, but generally the thief is never caught, nor is any punishment offered to him. As a result of incapable government, at the present moment, thieves, rogues, and cheaters are very prominent all over the world. Om Gyanatim Ranjasa Gnanjanan Shavakaya Chakshul Mintamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Namo Bhistam Stapi Tamina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadad Maya Badati Swam Badantikam Vanchakapra Turubiyas Chakripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnabhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudeva Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So again, I beg for the devotees to give me their blessings so I can say something to inspire everyone and inspire myself also. So in this, going back to that first verse, where it describes for this reason the ministers and all the elderly members of the family thought Utkala to be without intelligence and in fact mad. Thus his younger brother named Vasara, the son of Brahmi, was elevated to the royal throne and he became the king of the world. So in that purport, Prabhupada talks about monarchy. Of course, everybody coming from the West, we know the history of monarchy, at least in terms of so-called modern society. You don't see the history of the world being described from the Vedic view. Of course, hopefully, through our vigorous preaching, that will change and Srimad Bhagavatam will become the foundation for understanding history not only of the world but as we can see the whole universe. This pastime is taking place within the sixth manu. I think currently we're within the seventh, are we not? Yeah. So we're going back. Each manu appears in a day of Brahma, correct? Is it? What is the 14 manus in one day? So anyway, that span of a manu is about 1,000 yugas. Some of the scholars help me here. Anyway, it's a very long time. So we're still here in this pastime because it's very significant for our understanding, and we can see even back during this period of time. I'm not sure what yuga this in. I would assume it is definitely not Kali Yuga for sure. We would say Dwapara or somewhere around there. Well, this is when they're doing sacrifice, so this has to be Treta Yuga. Treta Yuga, isn't it? In such a yuga, there was performance of yoga for achieving perfection. Treta Yuga, big fire jagas. Dwapara Yuga, elaborate deity worship. We still see some of these temples left over. If you go to South India, Tirupati, some of these places. Kali Yuga, forget it. None of the qualities for doing any of these things. So we just change Hare Krishna. That is our Yuga Dharma. And in this Kali Yuga, as I was mentioning, therefore, up to this point, monarchy was the standard. And why was that? Well, those monarchs were Kshatriyas. Generally, they were Raj Rishi. What does that mean? Rishi first, which means they were great sages. They were, you'll read later, Prabhupada describes, they had the 8 mystic powers. Smaller than the smallest, bigger than the biggest, they could do all these things. So who could defeat them? So first, Rishi. But because it's mentioned that Kshatriyas had mode of goodness and passion mixed, therefore they had the tendency to want to lead. Therefore, they're in a position to ensure that the Vedic principles are implemented. And their hope is that the outcome for all the praja or the citizens is that somehow or another they at least become elevated spiritually, hopefully elevated to the point where they return back home, back to Godhead. So this was their motivation. They were not generally that attached to the affairs of the world, but out of a sense of duty to protect those who are less fortunate. This is the nature of one who is spiritually elevated. They're not so much concerned about themselves. See? My happiness. Why? Because they become Atmarama as you become more elevated. Therefore, you don't require anything. And in that condition, one can see how so many other people are suffering. Therefore, naturally, that's a natural response. You want to alleviate their suffering. According to our spiritual advancement, we become very sensitive in this way. Of course, as we heard yesterday, there's another category of Goshenanandi, which is, for me, a little difficult to understand. I remember joining a movement, and you would hear about some of our great acharyas, and you think, why didn't they directly go out and preach? Still kind of difficult to understand, but there's a particular service. Actually, they are under Krishna's divine energy, the IVA, Shuguna. Well, Mahatmanas to Mamparta, these Mahatmas, so they're under my energy. They're not under the most mature nature. So they're acting according to Krishna's direction. Therefore, some people are giving direction to serve in one manner, some in another manner. So that's always difficult to understand why pure devotees do perform activities that they perform. So anyway, monarchy, as we know, Kali Yuga, is described in the 12th canto, how eventually the monarchy becomes corrupt. Of course, what becomes corrupt first? Brahmanas, isn't it? That son of the Brahman becomes influenced by the modes of nature, and he curses King Parikshit, which he should not have done. If he was a Brahman, he would have done that. But Kali Yuga is advancing, and he becomes influenced. He still has the power of a Brahman, even though he's a little boy. And of course, as we read later here, that curse of a Brahman is like a thunderbolt. Can't be counteracted. The Maharaj Parikshit, he understands, no, this is the will of the Lord, so he doesn't counteract it. And as we know, that curse, we benefit from that curse because we get Srimad Bhagavatam. So the Lord works in mysterious ways, as they say. So many wonderful activities come out of that. Of course, here we are in Kali Yuga, and people have democracy, isn't it? America is pushing democracy. They think this is the best thing. They think that lifestyle that they have is the best on the planet. Of course, if there is no Vedic life, I guess maybe you can say that appears to be the best. But what's so good about it when you think about it? What is it? I mean, it's such an illusion. Sometimes being here in Mayapur, you get a lot of the brahmacharis approach me, oh, you're from America. Can you take me to America? Well, I mean, it's a goal. Even Prabhupada thought before he went. He said, I thought these Americans were some fascinating creatures, you know, because you don't get to see the reality. You just hear, and especially if you look at the movies, it gives you this false illusion. You need to realize, why are those movies so popular? Because people are suffering. They live in those movies. That's the only relief, is to watch that stuff and fantasize, oh, yes, one day I'll be living like that. Have some tragedy, overcome it, and everything is wonderful. But as we know, that is not true. It's all suffering. So, but if you're sober, you'll see that. You know, I mean, you go there and you see shiny, bright cars, you know, Mercedes-Benz, that automobile, and Lexus. These cars can do some fascinating things. They even have a feature now in Mercedes that you don't have to park the car. You just drive up to next to the car, push a button, and it will park itself, parallel park. So I know the ladies are like that. They don't have to parallel park anymore. Just push the button. Right? Inside, air conditioning, soft seats, even the seat will heat up for you if you need it to be. Stereo. What's wrong with that, right? Sounds good. I'm playing Krishna conscious songs. What is the harm? But you look at what has to occur for that, for you to enjoy that. What do you really relieve? They're thinking that they're going to relieve the agony of having to walk for 1 hour. Right? But still, people travel within an hour's distance, but they have to travel 60 miles now. Of course, they can go 60 miles an hour when there's no rush hour. Otherwise, you're sitting in the traffic, agonizing, you know, why is there so much traffic? I have to go, come on. Suffering, it's still a suffering. You have to pay for that car. It's not free. Krishna made perfect arrangement, didn't he? A horse. If you need another car, what do? You just put two horses together. Get another one. You don't need gasoline. The fuel is everywhere. Grass, isn't it? The horse, he doesn't go too fast. He doesn't crash. You see, you can drive 60, 70 miles in that car, but you're risking your life. So they haven't made things better. They actually made it worse. People have to borrow money to pay for that car. That's $50,000, $70,000. Put that in rupees. You know? How many people earn that much money in India? People working for 300 rupees a day. We're talking, you know, $70,000 so I can go to work and then come back home and go to sleep. So, and then they're working all day long, so much stress because this capitalistic society, which means no one cares for you. You can lose your job at any moment. As soon as some new technology comes out, your job is finished. Before, people were working in the field, like we see in India, you still have common laborers. Now they've been replaced with machines in the West. So what do these people do? They become drunkards on the street. You go to America, any city, and you find homeless people drinking liquor. Because what else are they going to do? They're seeing people riding Lexus automobiles and they're suffering. Why can't I have that? So let me get drunk and forget this world. Idle. So how is that better? And even the technology is advancing, that so-called advanced intelligent people, they're losing their jobs. See, these computer programmers, their programs are becoming more sophisticated to the point where you don't need a programmer. The program can do the programming. So what are they going to do? So much anxiety all the time. And then they come home, they watch some television so they can forget. You see some wonderful show, and go to sleep, get up, and go back to work. Even the wife, she has to work nowadays. You see, we're reading about the duties of the wife. Actually, if one has a good wife, that is a great asset. It's not that it's not a good asset. If you get a very good wife, it is a good asset. You can save the devotee, especially in devotional life. It's not that I get married, everything is lost. That used to be the consciousness when we joined. I remember being brahmachari, and I think it was considered better to bloop than to get married in those days. So, I don't know why, but I know in my case, of course I committed horrible offense 30 years ago and remarried. So, but I give credit to both those ladies for helping me come to the level of Krishna consciousness I'm at now. So in some cases, some people, you should be married. Find a decent wife who's Krishna conscious and help you. And a good wife, if she's a good wife, what happens? What is the result? You take sannyas. Well, women don't like that. But that's the end result. You're going to give up the wife is going to lose the husband anyway. Eventually, he's going to die. Or you're going to die. So why not voluntarily give this up for Krishna? Why let death take it away? It's more glorious, isn't it? So wife can take sannyas, travel and preach, live a simple life. And the wife can hopefully have some nice service that's there, or even now we don't see so much, at least in Western families, I don't see the children really taking care of the wife. The Western civilization is kind of still, it's a different thing, I don't know. But anyway, as Krishna consciousness goes on, we see these things are becoming more perfect, how our society is trying to evolve into a proper society. In India, you still see people, the ladies and men still have those customs. I think marriage is still a duty. It's not just a lusty affair. In Western society, at least the way I was raised, I'm coming from Karmi background, of course, and marriage is really a lusty affair, not a responsible affair. So hard to get out of that habit. See, that's a service to Krishna. So going back into the point of Varnashram Dharma, we see that even now we want to have monarchy. How are we going to do it? Is there any individual here who can be a Kshatriya and just rule the whole world? One individual? What does that mean? You have to be able to kill everybody. One person can kill 1,000 people by himself. Of course, America has those weapons now. They can put one nuclear bomb on you if they want, but that takes the approval of a lot of people. It's not just one person making that decision. But in the past, you know, I mean, Arjuna, he could kill everybody if he wanted to. And you'll see later here how the Brahmins, even though they were living in a very simple life, they were more powerful than the Kshatriya, but spiritually more advanced. So, therefore, they had no desire to rule anything. They have a small bhajan kutir, a little hut, where they would be absorbed in performing their duties. And what were the duties of the brahmanas in those days? Generally, they were the teachers, they were the medical professionals. They would come to the home of the householder and beg for just enough food that they could eat for that day. In return, they would tend to the needs of the householder. You know, oh, someone is sick. Immediately, they could cure them or give astrological readings and things like this. So nowadays, we see if you need to go to the doctor, what is it, $200-$300, doesn't it? And don't have a serious medical condition, you're finished. So, topsy-turvy. And of course, the brahmanas nowadays, who can, as we'll see later on, when there was difficulty, this King Vena, somehow or another, this bad son was produced. It'll be described later that his mother, who knows who her father was? Death personified. That was her father. And of course, we know the king, he's coming from very pure line of Dhruva Maharaj and ancestors. So the son, a son that is born, takes on the qualities of the mother's father. Right? So therefore, he's taking on the qualities of death personified. And the daughter takes on the qualities of the father's mother, or father, anyway. Let's say at least they take on the qualities of the mother's generation, and the daughter takes on the qualities of the father's generation. Therefore, Prabhupada made the statement that the children of the children, I think of the children of this movement, they'll be the devotees. You know, like myself, I'm coming from, what are qualities of my family? I mean, personally myself, as I mentioned before, I grew up going hunting, fishing, womanizing. You know, by the time I was 16, I've probably done every sinful activity you could think of. So, of course, now we're chanting and we're being devotees, but until you become freed from all those contaminations, they're there. So, someone may question, even I remember in the days of our household life, and the instruction was, for the householders, they can engage in sexual activity, but that's not unrestricted sex life. Not that now that I'm married, you know, I have sex like cats and dogs. Is that a license for sense enjoyment? You're still Rishi. So you have sex life according to samskara. Even Krishna says in the Gita that I am that sex life. He said, that is me. So Prabhupada had the instruction that devotees would chant 50 rounds before engaging in that activity, and you would try once a month. That's all. So So I think someone asked the question, why are they chanting 50 rounds? I said, so maybe you get purified and forget about all that business. And just give up the idea altogether. So anyway, that was the process. So I had one daughter produced that way, I remember. So anyway, you see the children in the history of our movement, they seem to have got, you know, I don't know. We're all pioneers. That's what you have to remember. This is a pioneering movement. Even the marriages, the way they were arranged, the temple president was practically as good as Srila Prabhupada. At least when I joined, that's what the mood was. You just surrendered, and you had to please him. So, of course, marriages were arranged that way, too. He just, okay, you marry this person. Jai Prabhupada. And I hate to say, of course, I think in a lot of cases, presidents, of course, were not complete pure devotees. Being president, you have to consider so many factors that were going on. There's a lot of pressure for maintaining the temples and the preaching. So I can remember, at least in Chicago at that time, the women were very big preachers. They would go out to the airport, $300-$400 a day. And at one point, they were demanding, if you don't marry us, we're going to go to another temple. Which nowadays, you know, people do that all the time. It's not such a big deal. But back then, that was unheard of. Wasn't it? Yeah, that's a huge offense. I'm going somewhere else just to say it, even. So finally, I remember, somehow or another, the president was able to arrange a few marriages. But he didn't want the women to go to another temple, so he had to arrange amongst the devotees in the temple. Which is really a bad consideration. You know? You're not really, you should consider, like you will read here later, what is this marriage? They look at the family, they look at the charts, you do your best to make sure this is something that's going to last. But they were just, okay, he's a good Sankirtan devotee and she's a good one, you two get married. I remember my my wife also, when I was called in and I was asked, I was told, okay, you're going to marry another Sangha. And I go, well, who is she? I don't even know who she was. Because even back then, the men and women, you never talk much. So, and I just said, Jai Prabhupada. So, which is really, when you think it, was pretty sentimental. You should have, I myself, you have Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu, not just Sadhu. You need to consult all three. And then make your decision. So, you know, but anyway, we're pioneers. All those marriages, few survive. Most of them ended very horribly. Matter of fact, in '83, I think the GBC even wrote a big wrote a big apology for those things. So, but anyway, I'm mentioning this just so that we can see how we grow. Sometimes it's difficult hearing some of these things that go on. But we see our society now. Similarly, you see how the Gurukul and so many things. People might look and go, oh my God, this is such a... But we see now, I remember visiting the Gurukul the other day, and it's very nice. Even the prasadam there is much better than what we eat over here. I ask, could I come back and eat over there again sometime? You speak to some of the other children here who grew up in that Gurukul and are sleeping in the grass hut, no air conditioning, no, just, you know, eating very simple food, you know, chanting japa with a stick. You didn't finish around. But our society is maturing. This is what I'm trying to make. Similarly, these other issues are coming up. How do we implement Varnashram Dharma? It's not such a simple thing, you know. Do we have a monarchy again? I don't know. That's very difficult to answer. Of course, we see in our society we have a GBC. Prabhupada said, even himself, individually I don't trust any of you. But together I'll trust your decision. So we have somewhat of a democracy. Of course, the GBC is self-appointed too. So it's still a little bit of a monarchy that's there. And it is our duty to actually cooperate with it. And even though, you know, as we see in the beginning, so many things may go wrong, and as we can see, many things are going right. Otherwise, how is our society going on? Because we have this extra mercy of Srila Prabhupada that is there. That's what we have to remember. Therefore, Prabhupada established the worship of himself. And he established his daily Guru Puja so that we can remember. You see, where is this potency coming from? Who's protecting us? That despite all else, we can become Krishna conscious and we can save others and support this Krishna consciousness. And we see that result here in Sri Mayapur. The big temple is being built. It's phenomenal, isn't it? And very inspiring. It gives me great hope that yes, we must be going on the right course despite ourselves. So one lesson we can take out of all of this is that being Kali Yuga, being given such an enormous task that we're trying to fulfill, we can learn from our past. We'll be learning here from King Bena, the things that went wrong there. You'll see in that pastime also how the Brahman has actually made a mistake. You see, they came together and they said, make King Bena the king. But the minister said, no. But they were the Brahmana, so they, okay. Then later on, they saw that he was a very bad king. So they came in and corrected, they killed him. And then there was more problems. Because then the thieves were like, yeah, now we're free, let's go. So they corrected it again by churning the body of King Vena and produced King Prithu. So anyway, our GBC, let's do the same thing, right? We keep correcting. Similarly, we can wait for the third, fourth, fifth generation. I think they'll be doing things more perfectly. They can look back, learn from us. And in the end, for those of us who don't achieve prema in this lifetime, Srila Prabhupada will hopefully grab us and take us back home, back to Godhead. So I'll stop here. And hope I didn't offend anyone with that class. But anyway, I just kind of winged it there. Please give the mic to Jamanjaya, please. Gyanagyamni, excuse me.
Hare Krishna. Your comments about the authorities designating husbands and wives and how that didn't work out was quite appropriate, because the authorities didn't make the proper, considerations. They didn't establish the compatibility through astrology and different things, economic levels and so on, educational levels and so on. So that's a very good point. Actually, also devotees have to be extremely careful. The mood in the original temples of surrendering everything and so forth is not possible at this particular time. Unless you're brahmachari, unless you have nothing to lose. But amongst the grihastha communities, we've seen so many times there is a situation that goes on, even authorities, sometimes gurus, sometimes managers and so forth, will take advantage of devotees and enlist them in investment schemes and different arrangements to make money, and then basically steal the money. Basically leave and steal the money. And I was just talking with one devotee this morning. That's going on in the community right now. An established devotee, prominent, is doing this. So one has to be extremely careful when he's approached or when he's involved in some kind of investment scam. Because still, unfortunately, we haven't come to that pure stage where everyone is actually what they seem. Sometimes we're not what we seem. I just thought I would make that announcement so that devotees can be a little circumspect and a little careful. There are so many different ways to invest money if you want to play the stock market, this, that, or the other. But generally, quite often, small individual presentations for companies that you have no idea how the money is being made and so forth, extremely, extremely dangerous. And this is called a confidence game, that once I have your confidence because of my position, then I can utilize that to extract your hard-earned money. So I found myself actually a victim of several of these schemes on different occasions, not here in Mayapur, but at different occasions. So I'm extremely wary now. But I also found that the lesson I learned is the best investment one can make is to utilize your money in some way, shape, or form for service, either directly to the devotees, distributing prasadam, distributing books like that, putting the money into Prabhupada's account, and if you have any qualms at all about authorities, utilizing your own wherewithal to present the the gift, and make sure it goes to the right place, goes for the right things, and so forth. That actually is the very best investment we can make of our energy and time, is to know that what we're doing is directly serving the Supreme Lord.
There you go. Thank you. Yeah, ultimately, too, all we can do is be sincere in our attempt to become Krishna conscious, and not lose focus at that point. And you're going to find, like you mentioned, there's so many things that are going to happen to you in your Krishna conscious life. It's not that because I become a devotee, now I'm just walking on water and everything's peachy cream all the time. Even the pure devotees, that's not true. So what to speak of us who are not pure devotees? So in Kali Yuga, which is the ocean of faults, all we can do is sincerely consult Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu, take a decision, and then when whatever result is produced, beg for forgiveness, and continue on. Look at that goal and keep going on. And some people can look back and say, well, I guess ultimately my karma kicked in here. And if you're transcendental, then you won't be affected by it. If you're not transcendental, then you go, oh, the heck with this Krishna consciousness. It doesn't work. Look what happened to me. You see, what is this? So, for those of us who make those decisions, I pray, you know, I wouldn't want to be in that position of GBC, you know, saying very difficult service. Imagine the decision you make could produce a great result or extremely, but somebody has to do it. So I take the dust from their feet, put it on my head, anybody who takes leadership positions, and all of us just kind of go on. There's no safe place, even Haridas Thakur, he decided I'm going to the cave. But who followed him? Minika was there, you know. The prostitute still chased him over. So there's no safe place in this material world. Just try to become Krishna conscious.
Hey, Krishna Prabhu. You mentioned the different sacrifices in different ages. And it's understood in Dwapara Yuga that the sacrifice was deity worship.
Yes.
When we read Mahabharata, when we read 10th canto of Krishna's pastimes, it doesn't seem like there's a big emphasis on deity worship. I haven't really read that in context.
Well, he was a Vaishya family also. And I think there are some mention of, I'm trying to think. Anyone think of any pastimes of those Vaishyas worshiping? Well, they worship the cows, which is also part of that. And the way society was done, when you went to Dwarka, there's mention of deities being there. I believe in Krishna's son, grandson, there was a deity that was left behind, which is still being worshipped to this day. So, of course, those pastimes that we're reading, they're focusing on Krishna as the Supreme Person of Godhead, giving us that Vraja Leela, the very intimate pastimes of Krishna. So you don't see much mention of the Karmakandi and things like that, which are going on. So, of course, there's a pastime where he approaches the Brahmins who are performing sacrifice. And they're so, I don't know, I guess because, you don't read a lot of descriptions also, detailed descriptions of how they perform the yoga also. You hear of the steps they went through, but who can imitate that? So deity worship actually requires great opulence and purity. To offer Krishna fruit that has no taste, that's actually an offense. But, you know, that's what flowers have no scent. This is what we're offering nowadays. That's all we have. So, do you have any other comments on that? Ladies and gentlemen, give it to me.
Hare Krishna. Back in the late 70s in Nandagram, I saw deities that Nanda Maharaj worshipped, Nrisimhadev, Varaha, and I didn't see the Vishnu deity, but they said he also worshipped Vishnu.
Prabhupada.
Deity worship, the essential practices of the Pancharatrika, how should we say, culture, or the Pancharatrika activities that Srila Prabhupada instructed us to follow, in addition to the Bhagavad Marga. This was the other day that question came up about Pancharatrika with the Bhagavad Gita. So deity worship is not the main emphasis in Kali Yuga, but at the same time it supports the his book on Gayatri Mantra. Gayatri chanting is Pancharatrika, and the Harinam is the as the Bhagavad Marga, also the comment.
Actually, we're worshiping the deity on behalf of the guru, too, you'll see that. So, this deity worship we're performing is no way under standard of the past. Imagine the Brahmins, they could chant a mantra and light the fire. You see, we have a difficult time keeping our cloth clean, in a sense. So, items are used once and they're thrown away. You don't use them a second time. Gold items. So we take our things and wash them again and use them again. Sometimes they have a little stain on them. A dog came around, or if just an insect touched something, contaminated. So no one can perform that nowadays. Even this standard is pretty hard, especially my person, very high standard. So who can even do that in around the world? Only a few temples are able to worship like that. Any ladies like to say anything at this point? Thank you for listening, and all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga.